certainly the private sector investment that's coming into space now, and that includes in Australia people like Blackbird, people like Grok Ventures, people like Green Collar, people like the CEO of Woolworths. That investment that's coming into new space right now is following that trend in the US. And we're also seeing this interesting thing where you invest in a little space company and then they fly into space. And the moment that they get TRL 9, Tech Readiness Level 9, they'll get a big spike in their valuation. So there's also an investment thesis here, right, which makes sense to business people and passionate technologists, some of whom have lots of money. And we do have a few of those in Australia. In Australia, we actually index pretty well. So we've got about 30 startups. We've raised about $15 million because since we did this slide, Gilmore's announced their close, and also another company called, I think it's Earth AI, closed around as well with Blackbird. So we're pushing way past that $10 million number now. Private money, no government money, except for maybe R&D tax grants. So almost minimal early stage funding from government. We also had the first ISS payload from Australia, which was done by one of our startups. And we've launched 3 CubeSats. And there was a 4th, as I said, which was a military project we were part of. Example companies, we've got 2 companies that are building constellations for IoT. They have different philosophies of how they're going about it. And I think both of them, they have unique advantages. Myriota, leveraging credible depths of antenna know-how in the Australian and South Australian scene in particular, developed and spun out to some extent by that military requirement. And Fleet, just a really strong moxie, really identifying the problem with remote connectivity. We also have a credible launch company now in Australia. Adam Gilmore is not a classic engineer per se. He is a person that was in corporate finance and banking, but just couldn't get away from his core passion, which was he wanted to be in aerospace and space in particular. So he's a very canny business person, and he's also someone who's developed a great roadmap for developing his service, both from a business point of view and also a technology point of view. 3D printing, hybrid rocket, and lots of other technologies. And maybe there's a collaboration there. When you meet him, you can talk about that. We've also got people like Sabre Astronautics, who've mashed up 3D game engines with machine learning to create systems to allow you to have one person managing fleets of spacecraft rather than massive teams of people required for one spacecraft. This company in particular has been a foundation company for so many others. These guys did a lot of the analysis that ended up getting fleets frequencies, and they managed to do that in record time because they used a sort of next-gen approach. And again, we've got other companies that are doing stuff in STEM. This one was the first one. They started in South Australia, the other two in New South Wales. Hopefully there'll be some others. And we have, again, a whole lot of other companies that are active, not including the ones in the room and not including another about 10 that we've discovered in the last 3 months. So question, could we grow a massive domestic industry capability here in Australia? And if we looked at the trajectory that the US has been on, the answer mathematically seems to be yes. So we're going to study that a little bit. There's certainly a massive trend, as we talked about a little bit, about digital. This middle class change that I talked about before, current middle class, look at the numbers in the Northern Hemisphere in particular. Those don't change very much. But if you look at the numbers in the Southern Hemisphere and MENA and ASEAN, they change a lot. And these are our people. You know, these are people who are using services and in fact need to use, want a lifestyle that's like ours, but we need that lifestyle to be more efficient, more sustainable. It can't be as wasteful as ours is right now. They need to use less plastics. They need to use less of an impact on the environment, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The only way we think we're going to pull that off is with data. We've also got a pretty good, compound interest growth rate for the space agency. It's, pretty good. 15%. We went and dug into the numbers and found that it's better than real estate. And so we're on track to hit a roughly $1 trillion industry. There's some debate whether it's 750 or a trillion. They're big, thumping numbers. And we also believe that the mix is going to change quite dramatically and that a large fraction of it's going to be new commercial activity. The UK industry set themselves a target. They said, well, UK is 10% of the global GDP right now. I think they've fallen a bit, but back then when they set the target, they had a big GDP proportion. So they set themselves a goal to have a 10% share of that industry. And that worked out to about something like 70 billion pounds, I think, when you rounded it out from US dollars to pounds. The other thing that also is happening is that a value chain is shaking out. So previously the value chain was sell this to NASA or sell it to a scientist. And the value chain increasingly is starting to look like this, where you have infrastructure in orbit delivering value to application providers who are solving problems, and those problems are massive scale on the Earth. And business 101 is that for an investor, for cash flow, the value actually increases as you get closer to the customer. So we're already seeing that a lot of government services that are being provided for free right now are actually going to move to a commercial model or move to different funding models. So things like weather, a lot of the big weather spacecraft, for example, around the world are at end of life and they have not been funded. The US Navy, for example, has had its own weather constellation for a long time. It has not had funding for the new one. So they are looking to commercial operators to provide them with the kind of prediction that they need to safely deploy their vehicles. And that's increasingly a factor. So we're seeing that there's an opportunity for all levels of this value chain to access new commercial funds. And also we're seeing these, we talked about these use cases before. So what would a $40 billion industry look like? So if we actually pushed ourselves to 4% of global turnover, which would be a super aggressive BHAG, but if we were just 4% of global space turnover, we would have a $40 billion industry by 2030, which would employ thousands and thousands of people. We certainly, if we can just move ourselves by 2020 to more than 1% of global turnover, a little bit less of a BHAG, if we can just move ourselves to there, how big an industry could we create in Australia? How much impact could we have, and how integrated into the world space economy might we become? And actually, we're pretty aggressive about that. And we think somewhere between these numbers is where we're going to land. Somewhere between. I mean, if we had a $10 billion industry, that would be bigger than the wine industry in Australia, which employs thousands of people. And all of you guys would have a job in the space industry because we would need your knowledge. We would need your leadership. We would need your help to also communicate those industries, right? Because you look at the wine industry, there's thousands of people who are not actually on the vineyard. They're just there marketing, collaborating, making labels, making wine, handling the transport, doing all those other elements. If business models stay the same, so why existing companies should support this? So if business models stay the same, there's no loss. So they can bet on business models staying the same. Good luck with that. If value chains are going to be massively disrupted, then the cost is going to be huge. Huge. For them. So we think what they should do is make some bets in new space and start to get involved in the new space world and start to lift up some of these entrepreneurial teams and try to change and learn from them. You have a young engineer and let's say he or she has a choice. Do I go and work with Boeing, which is where my heart leads me, or do I go and work with Google? Well, what if they go and work with Boeing and they discover an organization that's rusted on, right? That's kind of male, pale, and stale, you know? And what if they go to Google and they discover an organization that's actually highly technically agile, that is looking to do things in the space industry, that is looking to use data in new ways? Where are they going to go with their career? And that is the problem that Big Aerospace has right now. So those guys have a cultural time bomb that's ticking, which is retention of the highest talented people. So new space is actually a critical cultural movement. So this is my argument. They should just make some bets And happily, I think since we did this slide, a lot of the big companies have actually contacted myself and my co-author of this and said, we believe you and we're going to use this slide to help create change in our own organizations. Where should we be placing our bets? Okay, let's, you've all been through that round table, or many of you have been through the round table. We think that we have incredible competitive advantages in these areas. In particular, in Melbourne, we have an amazing talent base here. We also have incredible ground and space operations. We are part of the Deep Space Network. We have loads of engineers who are involved with Square Kilometre Array and other projects. We do have a number of our universities and research organizations in these other areas are just world class, despite very low funding for some of them. And I haven't mentioned things that are starting to get on our radar, like quantum computing, which appears to be increasingly seen as a new form of communication. The entanglement of two particles, allowing us to do extremely high bandwidths, ignore the barrier of speed of light, don't even need line of sight. That's all coming, right? That stuff's all coming, it seems. And that we're starting to have a few people ask questions about non-line of sight comms, just using quantum entanglements and qubits for cracking encryption. Higher risk things, orbital launch facility, manned space, hypersonics, large satellites, a traditional space program. But you know, there are ways to break these down into more minimum viable products, or certainly proof of concepts. And so, for example, Adam Gilmore and his team, they have built an incremental roadmap that they're going to start with suborbital, and then they're going to successively grow their vehicle size and learn as they go. So they created a good test and learn roadmap for themselves to take on orbital launch. And then we have a couple of companies that are trying to set up facilities here because they think Australia is actually a damn good place to launch spacecraft from. It might interest you to know we did a little study and we discovered that Woomera is right smack in the middle of the range of latitudes of all the big space launch facilities. There's a bit of a furphy that's been going around for 20 years. Ah, Woomera, it's not on the equator, so it doesn't compete. Well, guess what? The Russian launch facilities, Vandenberg, all those are way further north than Woomera is south. And Tanegashima, which is Japan's main launch facility, is about bang on north compared to Woomera south. We've also got people looking at facilities in the Northern Territory. There's a lot of oil and gas infrastructure up there. So people are thinking about launching to the east of Darwin. Equatorial Launch Services is the company looking at that. And there's another business, Australian Launch Services, that is looking at the Queensland coast again and seeing that there are certain areas where the air traffic is pretty low. So, well, no, who knows, right? Anyway, we think that there's an opportunity the government doesn't have to spend billions of dollars, actually. The government can be a seed investor here. And the government can use the federal government and the state governments, but in particular the federal government because of its sovereign powers, can sign international agreements, can join international missions, and by doing so give Australian businesses and teams the chance to pitch for components of those missions. And that is exactly the business case that the Brits adopted when they were considering whether they were going to spend money on the European Space Mars mission or the European Space mission to upgrade the ISS facility. The reason the Brits decided to spend the extra money was because they realized that it would be returned in more opportunities for British companies to pitch. And lo and behold, who is building the Mars descent stage for the European Mars mission but a British company? They won the pitch. So it worked. So we're sort of seeing that idea is cause. Let's leverage our $3 billion spend that we're currently exporting. Let's defragment our industry and our institutions, and let's have an explicit, deliberate program to build a domestic space economy and anchor it in new space, the next generation, and leverage your wisdom and your connections. That's my presentation tonight.